Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast, your gateway to kayaking fun and adventure here in the world of the interwebs. My name is Kelly Blades, by gosh, and with me, as always, is the lovely and talented...
I just totally stomped right on you.
I was gonna say something purdy about you, but let's get that name out right now, and you are, sir...
David Johnson.
Oh, you didn't do it with the right fit. Let's
see. Oh, hold on. I can do better. David Johnson.
Yeah, sell me like you're a game show host, you sexy little fella. So, yeah, we're back. We're back from the dead with a shaved head, as they say, as the rappers say back in the 90s.
So how you been?
I'm Jim Dandy to the rescue, my friend. I am fan to the tastic. What about you?
I've been doing all right.
Cool. Tell me about Toronto, man. So let's start off by getting this just right out of the way. The reason why it's been such a long time since the last podcast, and we made a bold claim when we recorded the last one that we were going to get right.
We record like once a week.
Yeah, it was actually once every 3 days, I believe. We're in succession, we're just going to do a 24-hour period of our life where we're just going to record. And then
what we should do is just start splitting up old episodes and just putting out like remixes.
You know, oh yeah, I think we got enough for like a tribute album right now. The best of Kayak Mainline. There's something. So anyway, the story is the other day, David, it texts me and says, "Hey, when are we going to record?" And I text him back in sort of a rough but playful fashion. "I've been waiting on you, pal." And so he writes back and says, "Yeah, well, I've been waiting on you, pal." So it turns out for the past like 3 months, both of us just naturally assumed the other guy was ditching us.
Yep.
And that could not be farther from the truth. And it goes to show you kids out there that communication is key. Really.
It's like Simon and Garfunkel, except we like each other.
Exactly. And I have a big forehead, but I don't grow the afro out past that. Like Art Garfunkel. Although I do have the higher voice. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? You're Paul Simon and Simon. I did that.
Love that show.
I know. We've never discussed that, and I just know you love Simon and Simon.
I love Simon and Simon. Boy, that truck. I wanted that truck so bad when I was a kid.
I do remember the truck.
It was all flat black, had the big bush guard and the huge lights on it.
You know what truck I always wanted, and I'm not even ashamed to admit it? Rocky's from Rockford Files. Jim Rockford's dad, Rocky, he had a truck.
I don't remember what kind was it.
He had like a, it was like a Chevy Power Wagon from the 70s, and it wasn't anything great, but it was a little bit jacked up. And
I saw pictures because people often get confused between that truck and Simon and Simon.
Oh, do they really?
If you look up Google Images, Simon and Simon, the other one pops up because they're both Power Wagons.
Okay, I love the Power Wagon. That was the thing, and that is only second only to my favorite truck, which is the Ford F-150 Custom Ranger.
Okay.
That was like everything was thrown together back in the 70s. We had one up on the farm in Cass City, and I love that thing. If I ever find one, I am going to sell one of my children to buy one so I can fix it up. And you know what? I don't even think I'll drive it anywhere. I'll just be that guy who has it. And then I'll wear overalls everywhere I go.
Well, that's what you definitely did.
Yeah, for sure. So, so things have been going well for you?
Yeah, I've been busy. Have you been paddling much? What have you been doing?
Not a ton of paddling. Here's the deal. I started working out.
Okay.
So I'll give you the story. I've actually given a lot of people this story and my personal life. And I'm going to give you audience members this story. So I went to my doctor a few months ago. And I'm just terribly fat, me. Just terribly fat, and I hadn't been to the doctor in a very long time to actually get like a physical and whatnot. I did for the fire department, but that was not the kind of that was just the quick make sure all the everything was where it was supposed to be kind of physical.
Right.
So I go in, and I'm just naturally assuming, of course, that I have like bowel cancer and on the verge of a stroke and everything like that. Whatever terrible things are going to happen.
But right. I figure any search on WebMD.
Oh yeah. You know I've got scabies. I don't even know what that is, but I have
cancer, sure, right? Guaranteed.
Yeah. So yeah, for sure. I'm just horrified, but I'm going to be a man about this because I need to. And so I go and I get all the blood work done and whatnot. And he says, you know, my doctor basically says, well, you're fat. I said, yeah, okay. Thank you, doc. Nostradamus. Yeah, I could lose a few pounds. He says, yeah, all your problems, your blood pressure issue, all that stems from the fact that, you're fat and you smoke. I said, okay. Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Again, I was hoping to get some sort of pearl of wisdom from you. I could basically...
Were you asking him for a light at that time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, let's go out and talk about this at the smoking lounge. And, I got some Havana cigars you can have. So he says, okay, you know, if you stop doing those two things, I think you'll be in good shape. I'm like, really? Okay, that's cool. So then he does blood work, and I come back three months later. And he's looking at my chart, and I actually gained weight. Ooh, and he's looking at my chart, and he's like, well, you're fatter. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry about that. He says, why I told you not to. And I said, yeah, well, I quit smoking. He said, oh, well, that's good then. All right, I give you a pass on this one. Now let's lose the weight. And I said, well, you got the blood test. What's going on with that? And, you know, this is where I'm thinking, okay, he's going to tell me, right?
You know, yeah, better take a seat.
Yeah, no, because I was already sitting down, which is good. Because I figured he was preparing. He's like, no, you're fine. I said, well, what do you, there's got to be something, right? I'm clearly.
You sound disappointed.
Yeah, I'm a 46-year-old man. I'm overweight. I smoked for many years and just recently quit. And, you know, my diet has been terrible. And he's like, no, you're good. Your glucose level is good. Your cholesterol is a little bit high, but just on the verge. And so if you lose a few pounds, your cholesterol level is fine. Basically, you're in great shape, except you're fat. And I'm like, all right, screw you, pal. I've heard that one too many times. So the whole story that I was getting to is that I have not been paddling as much as I've been working out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've been hitting the gymnasium.
Excellent.
And getting my squat on, you know. So that's what I've been paddling a little bit. I did some stand up paddling, which is fun. I took my son out stand up paddling down the river, which was just a hoot because I hadn't taken him out since last year. And of course, he's 12 now, so he's getting bigger and stronger and more agile with, you know, every step of the way. So he hops on a stand-up board by himself. And this is the first time he's been on by himself. He and his sister would take it out.
Right.
He gets on going down a river, not even a hesitation, never fell off once. He was climbing to the nose, was going back to the back. He was just having a ball. I was stunned.
Kids are the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, he's awful. I hate him. But you know, he's doing a great job. So
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So he's enjoying it.
Very much so, very much so. So, yeah, you asked about paddling, not a ton of paddling, but you have. I've been, you know, checking up you.
I taught an instructor course a couple weeks ago.
Paddle Canada stuff?
A beginner instructor course with Paddle Canada. And then two weekends ago, I taught a five-day Paddle Canada Level 3, which is our second from the top, so advanced.
Okay, so I'm gonna put you on the spot here. We did, folks, we did not talk about this beforehand. I'm going to put you on the spot here. So... it's level 1, 2, 3, right? Is there?
There's five. So it starts at basic, but that's like super basic. Okay. And then there's 1, 2, 3, 4.
As we like to say, paddle with a pulse on level one.
Right. Exactly.
So it goes five levels, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just like the American Canoe Association, the BCU, there's sort of this paradigm of five, right? Mm-hmm. So someone's coming to you and they want to be a Paddle Canada level one coach, instructor. What do you call them?
Level one sea kayak instructor.
Level one sea kayak instructor. Number one piece of advice you can give.
So they want to be an instructor? I would say have their rescues dialed down, for one thing, like their own personal skills. I find people tend to not have really solid rescue skills because you got to sit and teach other people how to do it, so you need to know it way better than they do.
Okay.
That's usually my first point.
All right, so then now same question for level two.
Level two instructor?
Yep.
At that point, you would have been a level one instructor. Correct. And teach a ton of courses because there's a huge jump between level one and level two. And a lot of people think, well, I'll just teach two courses and then I'll go for my level two. And then so much of it is based on your teaching history and to be able to just kind of come up with a lesson right away and teach that on the course. So you need to have a fair amount of experience.
Cool.
That's usually what I suggest to people.
Cool. Hmm. Level three.
Level three is only done by mentorship. You can't take it by a course.
Nice. All right.
And so what you end up with that one, it's the depth of knowledge because you're teaching a level three skills course, which is a pretty advanced course, and there's a ton of knowledge. Like, you need to know a lot of weather and a lot of nav, and that's where I think a lot of times at that stage people have a little bit more of a difficult time, because it's not very sexy to learn that type of stuff. Okay, everyone so likes the, to go ahead. They go out surfing and they do all that stuff, but then they fall down on really solid navigation.
Sure.
Yeah. Cool. So it's
and then so that's mentorship now. Level four.
Well, four is done by mentorship again. So the way that both of those two mentorship levels work is you partner with a more senior instructor trainer, and they put on a level three or level four course at least twice. And you go and you assist on one, and then you become the primary and the other person's the assistant.
Got it.
And so that's how it's done. So it's kind of, you would come on one of my courses, for example, we'd get you signed off on the first one. And if the first one worked out, we'd get you on the second one. And in between we talk and set up homework and all kinds of stuff like that.
All right.
So
mm-hmm. Good deal. And you yourself are a level five.
I'm level, so I'm second from the top. So in our case, so there's a basic kayak instructor, level one, level two, level three, level four instructor. So I'm a level three instructor and a level two instructor trainer. So in here inland, like in Toronto, I can teach the whole spectrum of courses that are available to freshwater.
Okay.
So level four skills, which is the highest level, can only be taught on the salty salt water.
Salty salt. Mm-hmm. Got it. Roger. Yeah. Copy. Check.
Yeah. So it was fun. So we did, I did an instructor course, which is the basic instructor, which is just taking people out super, introduction. Mm-hmm. And it was the coldest weekend I've ever had. It was terrible.
The coldest weekend ever. That's quite hyperbole, quite a bit of hyperbole. The coldest weekend ever. Well, ever.
So it's 3 days.
There were literally Friday mammoths cool. floating by in blocks of ice past you.
There pretty much was, So Friday was cool. Saturday is a 3-day course. Saturday was cold and blustery. And so it was here in Toronto.
Yeah, but
so
that's sea kayaking. That's what you do.
Well, yes. Okay. So then Sunday throughout the day, it snowed, it poured rain, it hailed, it was super blustery. Then it got sunny.
So welcome to Michigan.
That is pretty much. Let me have my moment of gripe.
That's a Sunday afternoon for us, really. All you Michigan peeps, you know what I'm talking about. Cool. Any epiphanies throughout all these classes?
It's really easy to get lost when you've never tripped in a place you've never gone.
Oh, did you do that?
Well, no, but I was like, hold it together, because I'm, so this level three course is introduction. It's kind of intermediate leadership, advanced navigation. That's kind of its big type of stuff. And there's rough water skills and all this type of stuff. So we went to a spot on Georgia Bay, which is known as the 10,000 Islands. And none of the students had ever been there before. Ooh. And within the first, so we left this marina.
So talk to us real quick about, I've been there, obviously, you and I have been there on a few occasions. But to the American audience who have not been to, I love the way you say, it's Georgian Bay to us, but you say Georgian Bay, which makes me really happy. So so for you guys listening, it is a series of ginormous rocks. The islands are actually just ginormous boulders in the water where people build houses and things like that. Yeah. So go ahead and talk to us about
it. Well, and they all look the same. So in a shoreline distance of 300 kilometers in miles.
Yeah.
So whatever that is for you guys.
47.
There's 10,000 islands in them, and they're everywhere from 2 feet by 2 feet with one little, Charlie Brown Christmas tree growing on it to a full size big island. Yeah. So, but the thing that what makes it really tricky is that, you look across the horizon and there might be 40 islands in front of you, but they all look exactly the same. So it's a great place for learning because it's easy to get lost. And so we left this little marina. We were supposed to do a 3-hour paddle, and I put somebody in charge of it. And she's got the little map on her front deck, and we go paddling off into the sunset. And within 10 minutes, we were totally lost.
Nice.
And she's going around the wrong bay. And I knew we were going off course right away because I got to be on top of where we actually are and also on top of where they think they are. So it's kind of two little weird layers there. So I realized she's going the wrong way. And I thought, nope, I'm just going to let this play out for a little bit. So we let it go for about another quarter mile or so. And I pulled the gang over and I was like, okay, where are we? Two of them pointed, confident. We're right here.
Yep, both in different directions.
Yeah. And I said, well, how far back is the marina? So they counted back and it was about 3 miles back, let's say.
And you'd been paddling for 20 minutes.
And I said that exact same thing. I said, how long have we been paddling?
Yeah.
And they're watches and they're like 14 minutes. And I said,
you guys
is that possible?
You guys are the fastest paddlers ever.
Oh, the best is like when the ball, you can see the ball drop in their face and they're like, oh, and then they're all frantically looking around the map, trying to be more confident for somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, did I say there? I mean, you were looking at the wrong finger, really, when I was.
Yeah, that was totally that, which is great because, you know, that's what the course is. So it's like, okay, well, here's how you keep track and here's how you, you know, if you have a moment of doubt. And so yeah, we worked all through that. So that was 5 days of excitement doing that.
And that was your first day, like they got lost and then it just.
Oh, that was the first 14 minutes of the course.
That's fantastic. That is, you know, and for those of you listening at home, it's nothing new. You know, don't think that these guys are chuckleheads for doing that. Everybody does it. You know, I mean, they're so amped up. You know, they're sitting with the great David Johnston getting assessed. And then all of a sudden, you know, the propensity for trying to show that you're an alpha gets to be huge in those situations. So you want to be confident and to the point where you defy logic sometimes.
That's totally what happened.
Yeah. And it's fantastic. And then you just calm everybody. Cause I've taught like this, you know, I've taught things where you just calm everybody down and say, all right, here's the thing. I'm mortal. This class is screwing around in a freaking pointy boat. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's just take a moment for ourselves and realize really what we need to focus on here, which is this is just for fun.
Yeah.
And then everything seems to go better when you dial it down like that for your students.
Well, it actually worked out really good because of the fact that none of the students had ever been there before. You know, usually you always have somebody who just has been through there once before. And in this case, none of them had. So they loved the fact that it was really difficult because they were looking for quite a challenge, which is the people sign up for that course are, you know, so they're, it's not a beginner course, it's an advanced course. So that's what the whole goal was. So
yeah.
I enjoy teaching the upper level stuff. I find them often very emotionally draining for me. They're very hard to do. And so I do like the challenge of it.
Well, there's another element to that too, is that you get that higher level coach and the expectation is higher. You get somebody coming in for a level one and okay. They get it. They don't get it. They haven't been involved in the sport that long. So it's not heartbreaking, but you get people who train for like years to become level three, level four. And when they're not there, man, that's emotionally hard when you tell somebody you're not very good at your hobby.
Right.
So hard and bad. It has to be done.
That level starts to get an interesting course because people bring a lot of emotional baggage on the course. So these upper ones, because all of a sudden now fear is a real factor. There's real consequences to, you know, you could get injured. You know, there's other things like that that come out. And so now I'm juggling a bit of your, I've become a bit of a therapist for you. And so, but I enjoy it. It's a fun challenge. I think I spend more time prepping for the course than actually teaching it.
Yeah. But that's good though. That's what makes you good at what you do.
Yeah, well, so in my head, I'm awesome at it, but I don't know.
Well,
so I got some kayak news.
No, you do not.
Yep.
Shut your mouth. Shut the front door. Back the truck up. You do not have kayak news. Are we at that point already?
Yeah, we are.
You know what? Let's hear some kayak news because lay it on me. That's why.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
All right, so we've got a couple articles, and I'm going to predict that for the first time ever. So this is episode 18.
Okay.
For the first time ever, all four articles are directly related to kayaking.
No. Wait a minute. We actually talked about kayaking.
Yeah. And I have articles and news
about
that
kayaking.
Is directly about kayaking. Wait. Oh, one's about surfing. Sorry. The record was so close.
That's okay.
All right. So here's our first one.
Bring it.
Stranded kayaker rescued, then arrested.
Nice. All right.
I love a good story about kayakers getting arrested. It's my favorite.
Well, it all depends on what they were doing. So we can laugh about it because we're assuming it's like trespassing or it's wasting federal funds or something like that. But it would be a much different story if the dude was a pedophile. Like if they put the guy out and all of a sudden there's like kiddie porn falling out. Oh, that's not a funny story. That just went.
Do you remember a couple of years ago we talked about that?
About kiddie porn?
No. There was a guy who was a was up in Michigan area. He was a serial flasher.
Yes.
And in a park. And so a bunch of people went undercover in kayaks floating around trying to catch him.
Serial you know, at least 50%. Some of them just wanted to get a sneak peek.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Apparently the junk was worth seeing.
That's
the story that we made up. That's what I hear.
Yeah. Well, let's go to this one here. So this is in Lata County in Idaho.
Oh, okay. Idaho.
The sheriff's office, they got called to search for a missing kayaker who didn't show up at the takeout. Okay. This was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And we have names? Names.
I'm looking for it. The guy's name was Jonathan Wybley. W-Y-B-L-E. So these two guys are kayaking down the river, and things are going great. Sure. And they hit a log jam earlier in the day, and one of them lost their kayak. Okay. So they now are stuck in this canyon, and they can't get out.
All right.
But he was able to get to shore. So he's stuck on shore. His buddy hangs out with him. So the two are there. And so somebody eventually called authorities.
Okay.
Sorry?
They're huddling for warmth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I picture. Okay. So they called authorities, and they couldn't find so the first guy, he ditches his friend. So he's stuck.
This actually starting to sound like a joke. So the first guy ditches his friend. Two kayakers are going down the river. All of a sudden, one of them gets caught in a log jam.
So he said, "When I get to the bottom, I'll call the cops." So
if I could find my keys, I'd drive out.
See ya. Uh-huh. And so they send out a helicopter, and they use thermal scans to check it because they can't reach it because the cliff walls are too steep. And they finally spot him, and everything's good. I guess they chop her down a line, and they pick him up. And they send him back to the parking lot to pick up all his gear, in which case the sheriff's like, "Oh, I got some paperwork to fill out." And he casually ran his name through the thing found out that he had several warrants. A felony arrest warrant was out for the guy for forgery of evidence.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, that's the real deal. So, like, this guy's here's what I want to believe. He went like Wesley Snipes or Jason Bourne on him and just started, like, Rocky style, just started beating up the cops and then ran off back into the canyon.
You can't find me.
That's right. Don't come looking for me. You started this war. I didn't. Actually, you started it, pal, by forging stuff. But that's it.
Yeah. So then what they did is then arrested him and sent him off to jail, in which case he was in court the next day.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go. Do we?
You got to imagine what goes through their head, though, because it's like, you know, he's stuck on shore for a couple hours. And he's like, oh, well, now I'm, you know, hopefully the cops don't come and find me.
I bet he didn't even care.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Probably a hardened criminal.
Yeah, I think so.
He's hardcore. Yeah, he's like I bet he was a Crip and or a Blood.
With his forgery of evidence.
Yeah, that's what they do. That's what gangbangers do.
Yeah.
Is they forge evidence and stuff like that.
That's what they're known for.
Yeah, clearly. Not the crack trade. Nay.
Well, yeah, you know what that is? Okay. That's it's the liberal media that's making us think that they're into crack trade.
That day went from bad to worse.
Yeah,
and it almost plays like an Arlo Guthrie, like Alice's Restaurant, kind of story. So I like this one. I like this one very, very much. I do want you, however, just like the gunshot to the butt, I want you to follow up on the story for our fans.
I will. We're all over it.
Okay. Crack teams. All right, your whole team.
Yeah,
crack teams. Okay. All right. I'm just going to walk away from that and just assume it goes to plan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got a team on it.
All right.
Here's number two. Okay. More surfers harassed by Bay Boys want to join lawsuit, attorney says.
Whoa. Read that again, because there was a lot of that takes some time to unpack.
There's several layers of stuff here. More surfers harassed by Bay Boys want to join the lawsuit, says an attorney, or attorney says.
That is, first of all, poorly written. This is absolutely awfully written. I can't make Heidner. From what I'm gathering from that is that there's some dudes named the Bay Boys, and I believe they're a doo-wop group or a boy band. And they're mad at the surfers. They're joining a lawsuit started by some other organization against the surfers. So everyone's like sort of ganging up on this rogue band of surfers, attorney says. Is that about right? Did I hit it?
You're kind of close, but yeah, you get the gist of it. That's the great part about headlines. Headlines are great because they just tell the whole story.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's a class action lawsuit that has just been filed,
right.
And I guess in Palos Verdes Estates, which is a small city in L.A. County, just south of L.A.
Palo Verde, yeah.
Where there's a famous beach break that's there. And I guess since at least the 1995s going forward has been this gang called the Bay Boys.
Mm.
And they jealously guard it against anybody who wants to surf there.
They jealously guard it.
Yeah, jealousy. Okay. It sounds very much like the plot line of Point Break, except for the Keanu Reeves entire like bank heist part. But meanwhile, remember that great scene?
Are you kidding me? How could I forget? That would be
got Anthony Kiedis in
Bunker Weiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a.k.a. Lupton Pittman. War Child was Lupton Pittman. And
who else was in that? I think Flea was in that scene too.
Wait a minute, is this where you tell yuppies maggots like me I need to go back to the valley? That would be a waste of time.
Sounds like you just saw it last.
No, time. And it's so fresh in my. I can see him like right there.
So good.
Yeah, and then
it's one of the best scenes.
And then of course Patrick Swayze shows up and he says, "Back off, War Child." Seriously, he says that, and then all of a sudden Keanu Reeves was like, "Hey. Your War Child, yeah? I'm glad I ran into you. Why is that?" And then punches him, and then they start a fight, you know? And then he breaks the surfboard, and then Gary Busey runs over.
And, I love Gary.
Yeah, and then he signals cop style. But then friggin' Bodhi, the Bodhisattva of surf, he's like, this dude's the real, this is Johnny Unitas, Johnny Utah. He's like, he's the real deal. I'm going to invite him over for a party. And then with little or no training, I'm going to take him out night surfing. That's what I'm going to do. And then he's going to join our merry band of bank robbers because I love him. I love him like a brother. I feel, oh, what? He's a cop? No. No.
Oh. I'm going to take you down, but instead I'm going to hurt my ankle and shoot my gun in the air.
Uh-huh. That's a classic. That's a classic scene.
Oh, I love it.
Everything you need to know, you can learn from the sea, man. And the sea will tell you, every 20 years or so, it rejects humanity. And it rises up.
Australia. Okay, that's gonna
be my story. And I will be there.
Oh, but that last scene.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not cry?
I did. I'm crying out right now.
He goes off surfing.
No, I got, remember when they're at the party? Yeah. So big way riding, you're totally committed, man. You're up there and you're just jacked up like a freight train. And they're spraying beer on him. And then she says, and she's hot. What, I can't remember her name. Laura. Anyway, yeah. And she's like, the big wave riding is for macho bullshit. God damn, it's such a good movie.
But it's happening right
now. It is with the Bay Boys.
The Bay Boys. So anyways, so the people have been trying to take them down for years because they're not letting people surf on this beach.
And
people,
that would be a waste of time. I want to go join the Bay Boys right now. Do it.
So these guys, they're super organized. So apparently park up high and climb down.
You have to be super organized in this day and age if you're going to get anything done.
This is what's happening here.
Okay.
And so they would talk by walkie-talkie, and they would throw stones off the cliff as people would walk down to the beach, and they would like harass them. They've been doing it forever. So now there's a class action lawsuit that people are finding people who have been harassed by them. Mm-hmm. And they want an injunction. They want the court to classify them as an actual formal gang.
Wow.
And ban them from the popular surf spot and force them to pay fines.
Wow.
Yep.
So I didn't know you could, first of all, I didn't know you could do, this is where my problem lies. I didn't know you could classify somebody as a gang and it meant something. Like, I get that they're Crips or Blood Latin Kings, you know. All the Young Boys Incorporated here in Detroit, fantastic. It's a wonderful gangs. I'm sure they do a lot of good stuff for the community. But but I didn't know that, like, you could actually go, all right, those guys, we're going to classify them as a gang. It's a real thing.
Well, yeah. So I did a little research into it. I brought my crack team, pulled them off the first case, and I put them onto this one. Yeah.
Is that your oldest daughter or your youngest daughter?
My youngest
or the
daughter.
Dog.
I put her on the case. Well, the puppy was sleeping at the time, so she was so cold.
Thanks, Nancy Drew.
So they tried to sue them in the late 90s and then tried to sue them again. And they're also including the town and the police force in this lawsuit because they feel the police basically turn a blind eye to the whole thing. And it's been going on. It's super famous to the point where it's been written about many times. It's the worst beach to try to ever get on.
Okay.
And so this guy decided, he partnered with a lawyer, and he said, we're going to do it. And the cops always said, well, we don't know who the people are, so we can't arrest
them. That's BS, man, because he's one of them, bro. You know he's one of these protecting guys.
So this guy hired a private investigator and himself, and they went and they identified all the key members of the gang. So they feel they now, this could be the one that takes them down.
Wow. That guy is totally, totally in trouble if he ever, let's say, walks near places where people could use walkie-talkies and throw rocks.
I know.
You know, I got to say that I was a little disappointed in their tactics. I thought there was going to be something far more ingenious than, let's say, what the common household monkey would do. I'm going to throw poop and rocks at people until they get really distracted and leave. Now, I hope I hope no one has really been seriously hurt by the Bay Boys. But
well, there's been a bunch of people beaten up. There was a guy who they took all his stuff and they threw it off the cliff into the water, which included like a laptop and all. He had like $5,000 worth of stuff. They've done like that type of stuff. They're bad boys.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at it right now, as a matter of fact. That's Lunanda Bay Boys.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at those guys.
They're tough.
They are. They're tough. They're not.
Keanu to get in there.
Keanu, I think he's getting a little old.
Well, Gary Busey then? He could go undercover as a narc.
Yeah. Punk. Quarterback punk. How's it going? Yeah.
So, yeah. So, we'll keep an eye on that story. It'll go on for several
years. You mad? You good and mad?
What's a great movie.
It really is. All right, so on to the next
one. All right, story number four.
You can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Mainline, or if you're old school and like to email, that's kayakmainline@gmail.com. kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed Kayak Mainline.
This is more of a public service announcement.
Okay.
That if you find yourself in Warsaw looking for something to
do. Is this Poland?
That would be
because
it.
Because there's also a Warsaw, Idaho.
Okay, this would be Poland.
Okay, all right, good.
Find your way to the Museum, Sport, and Tourism. Huh? Go down to the second level.
Second level.
If you get lost, talk to Agatha. She'll show you the way.
Agatha? I'm sorry, Agatha?
Agatha. Yeah, she's a lady that works there.
Sure.
Yeah, and she's been there for several years. Sure. 15, she comes in usually Saturdays, gives free tours.
Aww.
Where you can go see for the first time Pope John Paul II's kayak, which was just put on display.
Did I? What? Yeah. He kayaked?
He talked about it before.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Pope John Paul II. He was a big kayaker. He was a super fan. And we're talking like the early 70s.
So what we're saying is that he probably listened to our podcast.
he definitely listened
to our podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So he owned a Klepper.
Yeah.
And its name was Fat Bumblebee was the name of his
boat. He is not very creative.
No. But I did really enjoy the article where the spokesperson from the Vatican was trying to gracefully explain where the history of the name came from. Mm-hmm. It basically, he said, we don't think it was the Pope that gave it his name. It was the former owner, the original owner of the kayak that gave its name, because Pope John Paul would never give a name like that to a boat.
Yeah, I think he would. Oh, yeah. I think he would.
Yeah. So yeah, he was super competitive. He did a lot of whitewater races with it.
Downriver racing.
Downriver. I couldn't say it. It's even right here.
It's right there. Yeah. You know what? And I bet there's a Warner paddle next to it too.
It's 90 degree.
100% chance of a Warner paddle. And he's listened to our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. You know what? And that's a good, sir. If you guys are in Warsaw,
Get yourself, talk to Agatha at the Museum of Sport and Tourism.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be there. It's on permanent display.
Permanent. Until they actually find his dog house for his dog, and then they're going to move it. Or maybe bowling shoes. This is the Pope, the former Pope's bowling shoes. He was an avid 10-pinner. I don't know.
All right, so then our last story.
That was a good one.
Yeah, well, that took lots of research. Yeah. But very few people know that he was a kayaker. He kept that as kind of low-key.
Well, I think really what overshadowed it is his direct voice to God.
That's true.
He was literally the Pope, you know. I mean, when people at the end of the analogy, when people say, "What are you, the Pope?" Literally, he said, "Yes."
Mm.
Yeah. So I think people got distracted by the fact that he was the head of the Roman Catholic Church over minor detail that, like, he might have been.
That's true. I can't believe they should. Though, you know, I remember many years ago, Remember when Bono used to wear those huge, big, giant fly sunglasses?
Yes.
During the ZTV era? When Bono first met the Pope, the Pope asked him for his glasses and stole them from him.
Oh.
He loved them. And so there's all these photos of him wearing them around, these massive sunglasses.
That's cool. Yeah. Now we got the poor guy, right? Who is he now? What is his story? He likes to bicycle. He's a bicyclist.
Yeah, you're right. He does.
Yeah.
You know what he also does is he calls up, people would write in. And he still does it, and they're actually trying to get him to stop because people would write in and ask for a blessing or stuff, and they would put their phone number, and he would personally call people up.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so it was causing quite a little kerfuffle because he would call people in France, and they would all be freaking out, calling your mother or something like that, like would be like, and lots of people would like hang up thinking it was a joke.
Sure. I would. Yeah. I would totally.
So they had to put out a little press release, to say that he does call people, so don't hang up on him.
Okay.
In which case, the morning DJs in the area just went hog.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's the Pope.
All right, so here's our last story.
Okay. I can hardly...
Kayak, here's the headline. Kayak completes voyage from Australia to New Zealand.
Would that be completes voyage?
Yeah, kayaker completes voyage.
You said competes voyage.
Start again. Okay. Hold on.
And take two. So you got another story for us, David, do you?
Kayak completes voyage from Australia to New Zealand without kayaker.
Well,
and this this popped up about
a
month ago.
Well,
yeah. Did you hear about the story?
No, but here's the thing. This officially proves it. Mm-hmm. That these people who do these long trips, they really didn't do anything. they followed some sort of transatlantic, transpacific current.
Yeah.
And it was all the ocean doing it. I know this.
So this all started back in 2014 when Stuart clearly wanted to paddle across the gap.
Yeah.
So he starts off and he had one of those big, giant, barely kayaks that are huge.
Yeah.
And he had to get rescued 12 hours into it. I remember when I was reading about it because I thought, wow, that's weird. So 12 hours, he pulled the plug on it. And so a chopper came out and got him and pulled him. And he had all this equipment failure?
No.
Yeah, equipment problems that he was having with his
boat. But wait a minute. According to your students earlier, that would have put him roughly at 170 miles.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. It wasn't that far offshore. Oh. He was only like a day into it.
Yeah, but if they can go 3 miles in 14 minutes.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was almost halfway across.
Exactly, he was there.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So he had all these equipment problems, so he pulls the plug on it. They come pick him up. He had abandoned his boat.
Yeah.
And grabbed a can, jumped on the chopper, and he went back. And now, 18 months later, what washes up on the beach?
Mm.
In fact, the exact beach that he wanted to make landfall on was his boat.
Wow. That's some good navigation, though.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Go home. So his boat lands up, and it got found last month by some guy walking his dog. And there's a couple photos of it. You can search for it. And it's basically just this big, giant white thing that looks like a giant hot dog, completely covered in barnacles.
Okay. Weird. That reminds me of, while we're making 80s movies references, Karate Kid. You remember how Mr. Miyagi's grandfather learned?
I do like Mr. Miyagi.
Do you remember how he learned karate?
Himself?
Mr. Miyagi's
grandfather. Yeah, how did he learn karate?
See? There you go. So he go out. He go out, he fisherman. He go out, and I don't mean to be racist here, but this is my impression of Pat Morita doing Mr. Miyagi. So, if you're going to write in letters, don't bother. This is the best I do. So he go out, he fisherman, and he out fishing, and no fishing, no fish bite. So he sit and drink strong wine, strong wind. He blow up onto the shore of Japan. 10 years later, he come back with Japanese bride and knowledge of karate. Or maybe he went to mainland China. I'm not sure. But yeah,
you know strong wind, about that
strong
movie,
wind. What? What bothered
is
you?
The kid, what's his face? The main star in it, who was bullied by the bad guys.
Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, Ralph. He cheated at the end to win, and it still burns me up to this day.
He cheated at the end to win.
Well, okay, he's in this competition. He's not allowed to do any headshots.
Yeah.
That's the rule of the whole karate thing. And what does he do? He does the flying eagle karate roundhouse kick him a rubber.
Really?
Headshots.
It's the crane maneuver.
Don't question my knowledge.
You don't question my knowledge of this. You shut your dirty Canadian mouth. If done correctly, there's no defense. That's how it works.
But you're not allowed to use that in competition. And what does he get? He got the 8-foot trophy.
He did. It was bigger than him. But you know what he also got? More importantly, he got two other things. First of all, is self-respect.
That's true.
And Elizabeth Shue. And for my money, in the 80s, there was nothing better than Elizabeth Shue.
Oh, that was a good little
Seriously,
man.
You can give me an 80 star. Molly Ringwald, nothing compared to Elizabeth Shue.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody, any of the Christie Brinkley types, Elizabeth Shue. She had just a little bit of chubby to make her adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's just great.
Did every time I tell you about the time I decided when we were 10 to start our karate career?
Did you do a friend-style karate? Not karate, but karate.
So we rounded up my cousin because he'd get a discount if two people registered at the local community.
This is sounding very Napoleon Dynamite right now.
This is very up that alley. So my parents decided to sign me up because we begged them. And so nobody in my other two brothers weren't interested in it. So my cousin, he gets roped into it. So we'd get the two-person discount.
Two for one, yeah.
Yeah. So we sign up and we show up and it's at the most beater little community center. And it's 6 Wednesday evenings.
Sure.
We were pros by the end
of it. Oh, of course you were.
Yeah. And it was great because we would learn the fine art of karate. For an hour. And I begged my parents to get me a uniform, but they refused.
Right.
But boy, did we fight afterwards.
Oh, I'm sure.
We just beat each other up.
I'm sure. You literally are the last dragon. You are what Barry Gordy wrote about. Can you show me some moves? There's another one. Vanity in the 80s. Elizabeth Shue all the way.
Oh, that's
Elizabeth
true.
Shue. Take that away, baby. Elizabeth Shue. Sweep the leg, Johnny. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So anyways, let's see what we got here. We had a guy who needed rescue.
Yeah.
That he got arrested.
Yes.
We have the Bay Boys. They're bad.
Uh-huh. That's right.
We got the
Iceman. I have okay, wrong movie. Wrong movie.
Wrong movie. Don't start quoting that. That's the latest.
Well, no, we got, and then, and so the next one was the Pope's kayak is safely in Warsaw.
Yeah, it's been restored in humidity-controlled conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And what else we got?
Then we got sweep the
kayak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kung Fu. Strong wine. Strong wine. Come back 10 years later with Chinese bride and karate. Miyagi-Do.
You're the worst.
That's fantastic. That is the best Pat Morita doing. Because Pat Morita didn't have he spoke very fluent English and Japanese.
Yeah.
So
he hardly had an accent at all.
Yeah, so he was almost racist when he was doing his version. So don't beat up on me, bro. That Miyagi impression was better than my Keanu Reeves. But nobody makes fun of me for making fun of a white guy, all right?
No, just leave. No, that's open season.
Yeah, exactly. Bro, whoa. So that's some great news. Thank you, David, for enlightening us on that. We have now, classically, we have been doing some book reviews, and today will be no exception. David, you got a book for us? You got two, right?
Well, yeah, I have two, why don't you start?
Well, what did you say? Why don't you bookend my book?
Oh, okay.
If you want us to start with one.
I have two shorties for you. So Warren Ellis is the author, and I like some of his stuff, a little hit and miss on it, but the book is called Gun Machine, and it came out a couple of years ago. It's a detective story, and it's kind of gloomy, you know, rainy day episode where they stumble, and it's not given away. It all comes out in the first like two pages, and you could read it on the back of the book. They stumble into this through a hapstance, an empty apartment that's filled with hundreds of guns, and they discover that all the guns are individually linked to an unsolved murder.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of a cool story. So, and it's all about them trying to track down the guy.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it was a short little one. I'm kind of hit and miss with Warren Ellis' stuff. This one turned out good. I've bailed on a couple of some of his other books.
Okay.
I can hardly speak.
I know. I have this effect on people for sure.
Yeah. This wasn't too bad. It was kind of a mid-length one, okay, and a nice little detective story.
Right. Okay. Well, the book I'm going to talk about, and it's a real quick synopsis, or not even synopsis of it, just sort of to get your taste buds going. So okay, this is sort of an alternative steampunk kind of book. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know what steampunk is the notion that rather than electricity or gasoline being used to fuel our modern society, they actually kind of stunted their growth at steam power. So that is like the driving force, steam power. So in a steampunk book, you'll find very like Victorian kind of feel. And, you know, you'll have computers running on steam power and things like that. But, you know, mostly they talk about, like engines being steam powered.
Yeah, it's all like brass and
gears. Yeah, brass and gears. That's really the way to look at it. So, but this is kind of, it's not steampunk, but it's kind of along that vein. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's by one of my favorite authors of just kind of throwaway novels that I can't get enough of. He does the Dresden Files. It's Jim Butcher.
Okay.
And it's called the Aeronaut Windlass.
Oh, okay.
And it is a book about warring factions where it's a nautical book, but with airships.
Oh yeah, okay. I read his first one.
Yeah.
And keep going. Tell me all about it.
Well, I'm not going to tell you much more about it. It's just a lot of plots and intrigues and royal families and things like that. And they use so they're using airships rather than water ships, and you know, they talk about going into the cloud line to hide, and you know, it's just a very interesting take on sort of a society that took a left turn from our technology and doing something different. But what I'm really fascinated by is not necessarily the plot line, the storyline. It's almost predictable in a fun way. In a very, right, very fun way, not in a bad, like, oh, I saw that coming, but yeah, this is what I thought would happen, and that's awesome. But
right,
what I find very interesting is the amount of detail that he had to put in to create this entire world, because it's really from scratch. Aside from people being people and us knowing nautical terms and us understanding sort of a pirate culture,
right,
everything else, like the buildings in which they live in, everything is completely changed. Because if we don't have sort of the sea based culture that we have, because we really do. If you think about it, everything builds up from being able to use that first navigable trade route, which was, of course, water. That was the fastest thing. So our society that we have is based very much on, you know, you living in Toronto, me living in Detroit. On the Great Lakes, if things flourish on the coasts because we have that trade. Well, so what if you don't have that? What if you have airships?
Things
are going to flourish by going up into the sky. So they have these huge towers that are really cities, but they're towers that go hundreds of feet up. I mean, it's fascinating in the detail that he puts into it is really, really interesting to me. So I think it's a home run, but I'm a sci-fi kind of guy, so...
It's a great story. I really didn't enjoy it. And now, is there a whole series? Because I forget, because I read the first one.
That's only the first one so thus far, from what I understand.
Ah, okay, because it's a newer piece, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. So anyway, that's what I got, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. I think if you want to get your nerd on,
It's great, because that one has a lot of like people who are like into fantasy, like castles and kings and all that type of stuff. It has a lot of influence from that.
Well, it does. It's actually almost directly... a pirate, America style, West Indies style pirate kind of thing. And the interesting thing is, as I was listening to that book, because I listened to it from audio, I was watching the show Black Sails as well. Not at the same time, but at the same time period. I recognized so many parallels to what they were trying to accomplish with the privateers, with the Royal Navy, with all this kind of stuff. So it's very, very pirate-esque.
Nice. I did. I really enjoyed it, because I was when I first started listening to that, it was a little touch and go for me initially. And then I bought into it and I was like, oh yeah, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got another book for us?
I'm going to do a classic one, Susan Hill's The Woman in Black. Mm-hmm. Did you ever read that one?
I did not.
Oh, you totally should. Came out in 1983.
Here's the thing. I will never read a book that people tell me I should.
Okay, don't. It's terrible.
Yeah, and then they do that, and it's already ruined. I'm never going to read this book. Anyway, no, I might read this book.
It's way better than the movie that Daniel Radcliffe was in.
Okay.
I'll start with that, because that movie was still okay, but the book is it's a bit of a shame, because the movie squandered a lot of really good plot lines that I thought have a lot of potential, and I think they just did it from a budget perspective. So, but the gist of it is essentially is this takes place northern England, you know, out on the marshes of the Eel Marsh House. This guy, young lawyer, gets sent by his firm up. It's around 1880-ish, somewhere in that time frame, but he gets sent up to settle an estate of an old lady who was a client for years. So they sent him off, and they're out on this house. He's out there alone, of course, you know, this haunted house type story. It's kind of this classic story, but the causeway to get to the house gets covered with the tide. So he kind of gets trapped out there for 6 hours. And so it's just all about kind of what happens. And it's kind of a great classic, like, bump in the night type book.
Cool.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. And the general prince of the woman in black in this town, which is all filled with kind of weirdos, is essentially like, if anybody sees this woman, a kid dies, is guaranteed to die.
Really?
It's been going on for 50 years. Yeah. Okay. So he doesn't know anything, and nobody will tell him anything or talk to him, because they're all just like, go away, you know. But the book is a great little one. So Susan Hill, The Woman in Black.
So I'm writing this one down now.
Yeah, it is. It's quite good. It's not super long, but it's a nice, good piece. And it's funny, because when the lady wrote it, it really wasn't that popular. And then all of a sudden, a screenwriter picked it up probably 8 or 9 years ago and bought the rights off her. And then he turned it, over the years, he turned it into this book. The movie, The Woman in Black, that Daniel Radcliffe was in.
Okay. The Woman in Black.
Yeah.
All right. Cool, man.
Yeah. So that's a good one. If you're interested, that's kind of scary, but not...
The more thriller?
Like bloody and gutty?
Yeah.
It's more thriller than
sneaky,
anything else.
Sneaky, scary, spooky. I like that kind of stuff. I'm not a slasher guy. I do not like the slasher films.
Yeah.
Saw? Never saw it.
No, I'm not either.
Yeah, it's not much.
I told you I had a friend that worked on that set.
No, you did not.
In the Shaman. Yeah, because they're all filmed in Toronto.
Oh, very nice.
And so he worked in building sets.
Okay.
And so they said it was like the worst experience to work, you know, from a pure like
Who is this? Who is that we're talking about?
A coworker.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't know who he is, but he's a coworker. So he quit career, so now he works for the government. But for a long time, he worked in the movie industry building sets. Sure. So if you needed like a grimy cafeteria, he could make any room look like a grimy cafeteria.
So little known fact, and you don't even know this, is when I originally moved down to Orlando to work down there, or to, you know, make my way as an actor, I did a lot of scenic carpentry.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Really? Well, he's
better, I'm sure, because I only did a little bit of it. But.
Well, so he's working on the set. He said it was the worst experience because they basically would be filming a scene all morning, and essentially it was just the lead actress screaming at the top of her lungs for 4 hours, you know, and a lot of moaning and screaming. And then they'd all break for lunch, and nobody would talk. And everybody was in the worst mood because
it was.
Yeah. And then they were all like, ugh. Back to work. And so then they'd spend the afternoon with lots more screaming, and that'd be in the day. So he couldn't wait till that. He worked on the first one. He couldn't wait till it was done. He hated
it. Bad.
But he said his best moment he ever as a set guy is he worked on the set for the first Partridge Family. Partridge Family, the one where the two families come together. You know, there's
Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch.
Oh,
Brady Bunch.
Okay.
Yeah. So he worked on the very first one.
That's cool.
And he said it was one of his most surreal moments because they were all working on different elements of the set. And he said they all put it together for the first time. And all the crew were freaking out because they're on the set of the show they all watched as kids.
Yeah.
And they were like sitting on the sofa. And he said it was a super emotional moment. Like people were really kind of choked up about it.
Of course. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he was pretty excited about that.
Very good. All right, David. Well, you know, we have kept our guests long enough, I think. Don't you?
That's true.
Yeah. And it was lovely to reunite again with you. You had some great stories. We got to chat a little bit, do a little house cleaning on what we've been up to.
Yeah.
Have you
got anything coming down the line?
You know, I do. I feel like I'm always saying this on this podcast because I'm always doing the same damn event. But, you know, the Great Lakes Sea Kayak Symposium is coming up, of which you and Eric and the mighty Ray Boucher.
I am so excited to have
what I call the Canadian Connection back up there again.
We are thrilled to be coming.
It's going to be a magical time. And my wife is going to be making a pulled pork. Again.
Right on.
So we'll have a little picnic up there.
Are your kids coming up?
They are. They will be. Yeah.
Right on. That'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they're quite good.
So that's the third weekend of July.
The third weekend. And the weekend before that is Door County Symposium. So I always go out there as well. In conjunction with a shop named Rutabaga. And they're the guys who put on Canucopia. I'm sure you guys have all heard of that before, but they do this event. It's a lot of fun. So it's the weekend before. And, if you're a fan of the show, you've heard us talk about this, that there's a sort of a gypsy crew that go of instructors that go from one to the other, that, you know, so there's probably 10 or 12 of us that all go up and, they'll teach at both events. So it's quite a good summer camp style experience all the way around.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to the door one. I've never gone.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a interesting place, you know, especially for you, new territory and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. So I'll be doing that. And then, I got that. I'm teaching for, Trey at the Power of Water. I'll be teaching for him at, Michigan State University here, coming up. I know, big stuff.
Yeah,
I'm going to be a professor of some sort. I'm just pretty much running the joint now. I got my PhD in paddleology.
You're going to start sewing on tweed patches on your elbow.
on my PFD. I would have to put sleeves on my PFD so I could put – and why, sir, are we stand-up paddling and you have a pipe? Because I'm a professor. Dude, I'm either Arthur Conan Doyle or I'm a professor.
I would totally love to teach with a pipe. Yeah. I think that would add a little air of class.
You know what? I just naturally assume that you teach with a pipe. So what do you got going on then?
Not much. It's going to be quiet for the next couple of weeks because I've been teaching for a fair number of weeks. Yeah. So I've got so Great Lakes. That's a highlight for me. Yeah. And then I'm doing a five-day sea kayak trip with my youngest daughter for 5 days going in August.
That's cool.
So, yeah, I'm going to Lake Superior for that, and I can't wait.
What part of Lake Superior are you going to?
We're gonna go out of Wawa.
Okay.
And we're gonna go west to the Dog River. So short little trip. We're gonna hike up to the falls that are there, and they're huge. They're super massive.
Yeah.
And so
I actually not to add a downer to that, but I had a friend years ago who passed away in that river.
Really?
Yeah, running.
When, like the whitewater trip?
Yeah.
Ah, that sucks.
Yeah, 90. It was the first guy that I actually knew, and sadly, there have been more since, but the first guy I actually knew to die whitewater boating.
Really?
So, yeah. It was pretty intense, but it's beautiful up there.
Oh, yeah.
So that's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, so we'll do 2 days getting out to Denison Falls.
How old is your oldest?
She is going to be 12 in September.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, so it's the two of us. And so we were planning it. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, if it's just the two of us for 5 days, I'm going to die. So, you know, or she's going to kill me or I'll kill her. And so I called up my cousin and his youngest daughter, who's going to be, 11. And so, yeah. So the four of us are going.
So, you know, I got this 12-year-old son at home, but that's cool. You didn't call me. That's totally cool. I mean, I'm sure that's, so it wasn't on purpose or anything. I mean, we got our own stuff to do, so that's cool. We're gonna go cure a disease and build a gazebo without your help is what we're gonna do.
You're a true humanitarian.
It's not even. I honestly, I'm busy that week, so you know, so that's happening, and I wouldn't even want to go. I don't. Matt, hold on, my son's talking to me, right? Yo, he's a dirty bastard. Yeah, okay. I don't think he wants to go either. So that's cool. It's all right.
Well, you know, trip's full.
Hey, you know what? My kids are older and stronger than yours. So keep that in mind. You have to drive. I'm wondering if you have to actually, if you're going to drive through Michigan to get up there.
We'll stop by for tea.
I don't know if you're actually going to make it through. I have connections.
Yeah.
I have connections in this area. So no, this is going to be great. This is a lot of fun. I am excited. I'm excited about your trip though. This is fantastic. Yeah. I'm actually taking my kids backpacking. So I realized
I had been going there for 15 years up to this period. None of my family had been up.
Yeah.
So I thought I need to bring them if anything, so they know where to spread my ashes.
Right. Right. Cause you can't count on me.
Pretty excited. So now that I've done a whole bunch of teaching, that's my next focus is to plan that.
So that's cool that you're taking the girl though, because I feel the same way. And I think probably a lot of people out there do. You go out to all these beautiful places,
yeah,
all these fantastic spots, and then you're like, you know what's missing? This is the actual kids I like hanging out with.
Yeah, usually I'm always out there with clients, which are, you know, they're fun, but yeah. I'd rather be with my kids.
Yeah.
So yeah, so Caitlin and I are going. We're gonna have a good time.
That's totally sweet. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
Cool. All right. Well, it is time to say goodbye to all our company, I believe.
Yeah.
You got anything? You got anything else?
No, I got no more.
I got you. You are spent. You've left it all on the table. Threw it all on the mat, my friend. You gave 110%. You are a beer commercial.
Yeah.
So, perfect. I got nothing else. I am very, very happy that we had a chance to chat this evening and that you guys could join us out there in podcast land. And if you liked what you heard, please write us a review on iTunes. And if you have any questions, by all means, join us on our Facebook page. That's, what is that? What do we got for the Facebook? Kayak Mainline.
Yeah, exactly. Just
flat out, straight up Kayak Mainline or kayakmainline@gmail.com. Love to hear some questions. We would love to answer some questions. Far be it from us to hold our vast intellect to ourselves.
Mm-hmm, so. Exactly. Oh, and a new update. If you are a user of Google Music, you can also pick us up there as well.
Really?
On a new podcast service.
You know what we need to do is we need to set up something so we can pick your paddling soundtrack because we know how much you like a paddling soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, and then I've been too busy.
Well, you know, that happens. All right. Cool, homie. Well, for all of you out there, my name is Kelly Blades, and
I'm David Johnston.
And we have been the Kayak Mainline Podcast. If you enjoyed yourself, please write your congressman. We are out.
That's 1 point, round kick. Eight.
Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself.